Love the Daily Show Ears Edition? Then help us get to know you so we can keep creating the content you love. Go to cohst.app/TDS or click the link in this episode's show notes to fill out a quick 2-minute survey. And tell us a little bit about yourself.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
My guest tonight, a fine, fine actor whose films include Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown. His latest is Changing Lanes. Please welcome Samuel L. Jackson.
You got some dudes named the Goo Goo Dolls sitting here with their feet up here, man. My mom would, like, lose her mind if she saw a guy sitting on a sofa with them.
They had their feet up.
I can't do that.
No, it's true. It's very true. I just have to inform our viewers, the Goo Goo Dolls did put their feet up on a different show.
And I was watching that show.
Yes, yes!
And
boom! You're
I wanted to make
fan.
Sure, and I'm a big fan, and I know that nobody moved the cushions, and my mom wants me to wear these pants twice.
Exactly. You know what's the worst part about that is when you lifted up the kitchens, you revealed to America, it's plywood under there. It's not even like, did you see that when you looked?
I thought that was part of the design.
No, that's, yes, it is when that's, you're on cable. It is part of the design. But
that's designer plywood. Come on. Who's that guy that uses wood in all his furniture things?
Bob Villa.
Yeah, so.
Are you a handy guy? Are you good with, like, the power tools stuff? Do you build stuff? Do you do any of that stuff?
Not anymore. I did for a long time.
Did you really?
Yeah, because I built sets when I was doing theater. That was one of the jobs that I used to do before I was able to work wherever I felt like working.
Really?
So when I didn't have a theater job, I built sets and I hung lights and I did all this stuff. So I did it and I made...
So you really know it from the inside out. I mean, paid the dues doing set design and building stuff.
Set building. I didn't design. I had hammers, nails, drills. Yeah.
I
did design in college, but...
Right. Yeah. I like to say that I was a caterer, but what I was is the guy in the back who would cut like 1,000 tomatoes. So I like to say, yes, catering. I did that.
Yeah, I had a job sort of like that in college. I actually put food on airplanes.
Like on the cart?
Well, I drove the truck from the kitchens out to the plane and put the food in the shelves and put the things on it we eat when we fly.
I would pay to be able to do that.
Really?
That seems like the coolest job. The guy with the headphones.
Yeah, we did that.
Who comes out with the?
We used to race like the other guys from the airlines to the plane, so that whoever got to the liquor cabinet first got the liquor.
This is everyone's fear when they fly: is that that's what's going on, that those guys are racing. I would imagine that the Zamboni, like those.
Zamboni's a cool job. Yeah,
don't you think?
I can see that. Yeah.
You know, they'll let you. There's a Zamboni school. That you can, I'm not kidding around, it's a fantasy camp, and you get to go. I saw it when I watched now you're looking at me like I'm a crazy man.
No. I might want to be there.
You really?
Know? Yeah, yeah.
I've always wanted to drive the Zamboni, but I'm not a cold weather guy, so I never...
Well, neither am I, but, you're driving a Zamboni inside somewhere that's relatively, I guess, temperate.
And I would assume that there's a heater on the Zamboni.
Well, they'd have the heater, a tape deck, CD player.
They get it tricked out a little bit. Yeah, exactly.
I've actually seen dudes on tractors with, headphones on, rocking out. When you're driving down the highway, you see a dude with a big thing on the front of the thing doing the whole wheat thing, and these dudes are rocking out.
There's nothing else to do out there. Those are the guys that worry me.
Why?
Because when you're driving through the middle of the country and you see the guys on the tractors and they got nothing to think about. You know what I mean? Nothing to think about but destruction.
Well,
you just
maybe,
say him on the...
No, some of them may be listening to books on tape now.
All right. I'll give you that. Nice to see you.
Thank you very much.
You look well?
I'm feeling well.
Are you?
Yeah, great. Just incredible.
You've been playing a little golf? You've been getting some exercise?
Not a lot of golf. I've been playing, a minimum amount. I had a little back surgery right after SWAT.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I had a cyst on my sciatic nerve, so right toward the end of the picture, I was in, enormous pain.
I feel like now I have it. I just caught one. I got it.
Really? Yeah. Well, I hope you don't, because believe me, I've never felt anything like that in my life.
Terrible, terrible pain.
Yeah,
were you scared
terrible.
Going in? Have you ever had an operation before?
I had knee surgery way back when. I got dragged by the A-train back in, 1990.
I once tripped over a curb.
Is that right? On purpose?
No.
Oh, okay.
Looking up.
Right over. See? And there you have it.
You got dragged by the A train.
Yeah. Yeah, way back in 90. I was getting off the train. It was like maybe a week before Christmas or something, and the lady in front of me had some shopping bags, and they tore or something, and I stopped. I did a very un-New York-like thing. I stopped to help her. And I helped her pick up her stuff, and apparently I had one foot in the train and one on the platform, and the doors closed on my ankle. And I looked up the track, and, you know, I heard that fateful, yeah. And the next thing I knew, the train was moving, and I'm hopping along. Train built up speed and took off. And fortunately, I was in the middle of the last car. So I was being dragged along the platform, kind of dodging the poles, and my backpack on. And somebody pulled the emergency cord. The train was a car and a half from the tunnel.
Oh, my God.
And it wasn't until I got to court, like, 8 months later, or a year or so later, that I found out the reason it took so long, the guy that pulled the cord was on crutches. So he was like crutching his way toward the emergency cord.
Oh my God.
There were like people in the door pulling on the door. Guys were trying to get my shoe off, push my foot out the door. And to make a long story short, it wrenched my knee all the way around and ripped everything up in my knee.
That's so incredible.
It was jacked. Yeah.
So this back thing wasn't
Hey. Not a thing, yeah. It was all right.
That's a wild, yeah. I think that's the wildest subway story that I've ever heard from somebody who's still living.
Well, my lawyer, strangely enough, when my lawyer did the research, I was only one of 27 people dragged that year. So it's a pretty common occurrence. Yeah.
We're dragging two people a month here in the city?
Yeah.
That's
exactly.
Insane.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
Is that why you think the guy on crutches just went, here we go again?
Yeah, right. Another one. I got to save somebody else.
There we go. All right. That is have you ever been back on the subway?
Yeah, I ride subway all the time. It's a much more efficient way to get where you're going, especially, you know, during rush hour or whatever. And plus, you know, I ride the subway and people don't think it's me. It's kind of like, you know who you look like? Yeah, but he wouldn't be in the subway, right? He'd be in a limo. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Does anybody ever come up and give you the nod, like, I'm not going to blow your cover?
Yeah. I'm not going to bust you out, but I know it's you. You know, all right.
I know it was you. I saw you get dragged down here one night.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
The whole time. Exactly.
Yeah.
But now, does that still bother you? I mean, the back and the thing when you're playing your golf? Because I know you're pretty much
not at
golf.
All. I'm fully recovered from that. You know, the golf thing's like totally cool now.
You know,
I've been playing. I played in South Africa after when I had to wait like 8 weeks before I could actually swing again.
Right.
So I finally
started. Are you a quick healer? Do you recuperate pretty fast?
I do. So I did my therapy stuff, and I'm still doing therapy. So I'm back playing again. Played in Australia a few weeks ago because I was there finishing Star Wars.
So everywhere you go,
everywhere I go, I take my sticks. Yeah.
They're still not done with that film?
Where you been, man? There's one more.
One more?
Yeah, there's one more.
What happens in this one?
Episode 3? I'm not going to tell you if you don't know.
Here's what I think happens.
What do you think happens? Okay.
Yoda loses his virginity. I don't know if could that happen?
Yoda's got kids all over the universe.
F*** me, you will.
Yeah. I've heard him say that. Yeah. Just as I was getting ready to go in, I heard him. He's standing there about to knock on the door.
Like that, do you? That's what's coming out of his trailer? Like that, do you?
Love the Daily Show Ears Edition? Then help us get to know you so we can keep creating the content you love. Go to cohst.app/TDS or click the link in this episode's show notes to fill out a quick 2-minute survey. And tell us a little bit about yourself.
Now this film, Coach Carter, how are you in terms of the athleticism of, the sport of basketball? Are you a player? I know you're a golfer.
Yeah.
But I know your knee is a little jacked up.
I stopped playing basketball, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 years ago when my knee really got jacked up and I couldn't move laterally, so I don't like getting served.
So only golf now?
Yeah. Golf is a major sport. I play a little tennis every now and then.
Tennis?
I don't like running, but I'll do it.
So you do like sort of a more stationary version of tennis.
I like playing doubles so I don't have to run as much.
May I suggest something?
What?
Ping pong.
I got an awesome ping pong game. I can play some ping pong, yeah. I don't like to stand like 40 feet off the table and you know. I like to be right up on the table calmly playing with the boys and then every now and then kind of, you know, give it all, you know. The old YMCA ping pong.
Set up in the rec room. I like playing ping pong, and this is the last time that I played it, where if you get the ball in the cup, everyone has to drink. Have you ever played that? That type of ping pong?
That sounds like another game, but it works.
It's not as athletic. The game doesn't last as long. And by the time you get to 21, someone has to be taken to the hospital.
Exactly. So that's the good news.
That's the good news of
it.
This is a continuing saga of the badassery of Samuel Jackson.
Well, thank you.
More and more. These films, these characters have been around for 50 years, 60 years.
Yeah, I mean, Nick Fury was around when I was a kid. I used to read Nick Fury comic books. You know, he was a white guy with a cigar and a patch.
Yes.
But then he became David Hasselhoff for a while, and then he became me. So the evolution of Nick Fury continues.
It does indeed.
Yeah.
And may I say, it's been upgraded.
Thank you.
I believe.
Thank you.
I believe the Samuel L. Jackson.
I'd like
upgraded.
To feel that way too.
But I almost wonder, you know, they were never able, the technology of movies was never at the advanced level that it is now, that these superheroes could on screen really appear realistic and you could get the jolt. I wonder if that's why it's only now that these movies are so big.
I think part of it's the technology, and I also think part of it is the accessibility of what we're able to do as real people now. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was a kid, I would read a comic book, and I would want to be in a world where, you know, there were women walking around in tights with green hair and blue hair, and
sure.
Folks had capes on, and they were wearing boots. And
yeah, they call that San Francisco, I believe, back then.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, we have all that, and people are walking around, you know, people are walking around talking on things, and they're looking at stuff on the little devices. So it's all very real for us. The only thing missing is this cat that actually flies.
Yes.
You know, that lands somewhere. You know, and he's probably out there somewhere just, you know, waiting to come out.
I believe that's
right. Yeah.
I wonder, I've always thought that science takes its cues from, you know, all the great Asimov and Wells and all the great sort of fiction writers and science fiction writers, and they see something like that in a comic strip and go, I bet I could make that.
Yeah.
You know, that they're taking their cues almost from the imaginations of a guy like Stan Lee.
Yeah, well, there's that, and, you know, there's also the fact that I used to dream I could fly.
Right.
I used to dream I could breathe underwater, mm-hmm. you know, and all that kind of stuff, and I wanted to do it really badly, you know, and now, you know, I put on that costume and I fall into that Marvel playground. I'm like, I'm in heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, ha ha, this is happening. You know, I put my eye patch on and I walk out there and I'm invincible, man.
They create it realistically. You know, in the old days, the superhero like Hulk, they just find the biggest guy they could and paint him green.
Back in
and
the
that
day.
Would be.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but the effects now and everything else that surrounds it, is it, when you're doing it, when you're making it, is it tedious? Is it, do you feel excitement? Or is it just you in spandex in front of like a green flat and they're just like, now the monster's coming? Like,
in the beginning, you sort of felt that way. Back when I first started doing Star Wars, it was just a big green room and we had some things in there. And then, mm-hmm. you know, I have my lightsaber and George will say, okay, there's this thing attacking you. And I go, how big is it? He says, it's as big as an S. Big as an SUV. Mm-hmm. I go, really? And how fast is it? He says, fast as you want it to be. So I'm like, so I can do anything I want, and you'll draw stuff around me? He said, you kick all the ass you want, and we will make sure it looks like you're the baddest motherfucker in the universe. So I'm back in my room, you know.
I love it.
I got my music going in my head. I'm like, I'm jumping and running. And then all of a sudden, when I go to the movies, it's like,
yeah. Amazing.
Look at me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's all that and more. But when you're doing like that car chase, we had like.
But that looks actually dangerous. Like, are you.
Well, we had like 12 cars that all did different. So when you see the movie, there's one point where it's like 19 guys firing bullets at it.
And right.
The windows are just resisting the bullets, and I'm just sitting in the car like. Yeah. And that's like a dope-ass feeling.
Yeah.
You know, you're sitting there like, yeah, motherfucker.
And it's actually happening while you're in there.
And you're just in the car, you know.
That's awesome.
And we were shooting in Cleveland. So we're on the streets of Cleveland.
Sure.
And people in the office building's like,
love the Daily Show Ears Edition? Then help us get to know you so we can keep creating the content you love. Go to cohst.app/TDS or click the link in this episode's show notes to fill out a quick 2-minute survey. And tell us a little bit about yourself.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Yeah.
You are a bona fide legend, sir. You are truly just the epitome of not just hard work, but like talent paying off, inspiring people in every way, shape, or form. Been in more than 150 movies, some of the greatest movies of all time. And I was shocked to find out that you had never produced anything with your production company, with your wife. And I was like, I couldn't believe that this docuseries that we're talking about today was the first thing that you're producing. And I was like, man, it has to be special. And it really, really is. Enslaved is not just a special series, it's a personal series. Tell me a little bit about it.
When they came to me with the idea, it was about, you know, finding these ships that had gone down, captured Africans on them that didn't make it. And, you know, in my mind, I was like, okay, this is going to be dope. You know, we get some divers and maybe I can dive with them, you know, and go down and we'll find, you know, skeletons with shackles still on them and stuff like that. And then combined with finding my ancestry and going into Ancestry.com and finding out that I was tribally connected to the Binga tribe in Gabon, and there was a lot of the traffic that came through there and what happened, it was a way for me to reconnect with my identity in that particular way and to tell a story that we never talk about, the people that didn't make it and what happened and how those people still profited from those people that did not make it.
Right,
you know,
right.
They didn't make it to wherever they were going, here, Brazil, or the West Indies to work, but they still get money from these people's bodies being stolen from this particular place.
Right.
And it was a chance for me to do something, which is so crazy in my mind when I think about it. When people would ask me, had I been to Africa? And I'd say, well, yeah. And they'd say, well, where you been? I'd say, well, I've been to Cape Town, I've been to Johannesburg, and I've been to Morocco, and Egypt. And they, oh, you haven't been to Africa.
That's funny.
Yeah, I'm in the real Africa. I'm like, what you talking about? So I got to go to Gabon and hang out there.
One thing I've never taken for granted, when I talk to some of my friends, African-Americans, who say, man, Trevor, being stolen from your cultural identity is such a, you know, there's a piece that you don't even realize is missing in just the story that you tell yourself about yourself. I wonder what that was like for you going back to a place where you didn't only go, I'm from here, like my lineage is from here, but they said, no, you are a lost son of this tribe. What did that feel like for you?
Wow. It was, spiritually uplifting to connect with the tribe and to look around and see my relatives in a real sense of faces that I knew or, you know, and understand and to be welcomed by some people that looked at me in a different kind of way, like come home. And I'm there with these people and I'm looking at them and they're so open, they're so welcome. And the ceremony itself, to participate in that and to look in these people's eyes and see that, you know, they really are, they're as proud of me leaving or what happened when I left as I am of being there with them and saying, I'm glad to be back here and be fulfilled by what this actually means, to connect with something that gives me a tangible connection to the continent. Occasionally, a lot of times when we were shooting this thing, when people start asking you how you feel, will you feel this way or do you feel that way? And it's like, I don't want you defining what I feel because sometimes it's survivor's remorse.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
That had
that not happened, I wouldn't have reached the place that I reached here that allowed me to come back and tell this story. You know, what would have happened had I never, you know, had my ancestors never been taken from that place and I was brought here. So you feel a different kind of responsibility because you did achieve what you achieved despite what this country is. Mm-hmm. And you are able to come back and hopefully encourage or tell a story that makes somebody want to go and see it for themselves.
You are somebody who has not just created history, but you've lived through history. And I really like that you say telling those stories. You know, reading through your story, I was amazed at how much you've lived through. Everyone focuses on your movies, but I look at the world that you've lived in. It's been like a movie. For instance, I didn't know that Samuel L. Jackson grew up with a stutter. You know, I didn't know that about you.
If I try fast, it comes back.
Right, but I also didn't know, and you correct me if it's wrong, I didn't know that sometimes you would use the word motherfucker to just like get your mouth moving.
Yeah, to just center myself and stop.
There's so many things about you that I didn't know. I didn't know, for instance, that you went to MLK's funeral after he was assassinated. And I didn't know that you were part of those protests, and a lot of who you are has been shaped by that time. When you look at those protests back then, and you look at the protests that are happening now, and you look at the journey that Black Americans and Black America has been on for such a long time with its government, I wonder if you've seen something that gives you a glimpse of hope.
Well, there's an evolution of, you know, protests when you look at it. When I was a kid, I grew up in basically American apartheid. I was in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and, you know, there were places I couldn't go. All my schoolmates were Black. I didn't interact with white people unless I went downtown. And when the civil rights movement began, or the sit-in started, my parents and grandparents were like terrified, you know, that I was going to go down there and get killed. But I was too young to go anyway. But by the time I got to college at Morehouse College in Atlanta, I started to meet and see and talk to people from SNCC, from SCLC, and I can make a differentiation about which idea I liked. And all of a sudden, I had an ideology, and the war started, so that was the anti-war protest.
Right.
Which I didn't know anything about the war, and the first Vietnam veterans I met were students at Morehouse, guys who had been in the war, and they came back, and they had hair like yours, and we were like, had these Black fists that they had made out of these cords, and they started talking about the war and what was happening. And then I had a cousin who was the same age as I was, who went to the Army and got killed. And all of a sudden, the war was very real for me. So I was in the streets for that, the anti-war protest. And the things that were going on, we understood them, and we could watch the old protests when they sick dogs on people and, you know, hitting them with fire hoses and all this stuff. People were going, wow, this is America? And we were like, yeah, this is America. It's like us watching the apartheid, you know, protests.
Right.
I met guys from South Africa, came to Morehouse, and they were my classmates. So we learned more about apartheid because we had a personal connection to talk to people about it. So we understood that, oh, it ain't just happening to us. It's some worldwide shit happening here. I'm sorry. So all of a sudden it's like, okay, so we're brothers in arms and everybody trying to, you know, get free from these shackles that everybody's got on us that tries to keep us down because they want to keep the things. We started to understand that, you know, change doesn't happen without, you know, pain. And when I look at these kids today, I am so proud of them, number one. But what we need to understand and press on them is they're using your militancy to make the dominant culture afraid of you. Even you are part of the dominant culture. So you need to go home and tell your parents. Your parents know that you're not dangerous. So you have to convince your parents to go out and tell these other parents that, no, they're not dangerous. They're just trying to assert themselves and make the world a better place for them because they're going to inherit it. And this is what they need. And this is what we need to do to support them. So they need to, like, you know, I'm not saying pull it back. All I'm saying is get those other people to prop you up in another way. And don't forget to go vote. You got to understand how revolutionary an act voting is. You can't just let that go. Oh, that don't mean nothing. So we're going to go out here and do this. No, man, go vote. You know, you got to get rid of the dude before you can change the place.
And Samuel L. Jackson, I appreciate you for existing. I appreciate you for taking the time to be on my show. Thank you so much, my friend. Look after yourself.
You know, I'm running, but you messed up when you said I can come over there anytime and just say
once. Anytime. Anytime.
Taking you up on that. You know, hey, please, go vote.
Explore more shows from the Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Are you ready for an all-new season of Survivor? You better be, because Survivor 46 is here, and it's 90 minutes of twists and turns you don't want to miss. Better yet, after each episode, there's a brand new episode of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. Each week, we go behind the scenes of the episode's biggest moments, taking you into the how and the why things happened. And this season, we're very lucky to be joined by an expert, the winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares.
What is up? I'm thrilled to be joining this team and to be giving you my take on how and the why players made the moves they did, what it takes to outwit, outplay, and outlast, and to ask Jeff some questions, because even after 26 days out there, there is still a lot for me to uncover.
Bring it, D. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.